All right, everybody, welcome. We are very pleased to have with us today Janine Yorio, who is the CEO of Every Realm, a virtual real estate firm, which we'll describe in a lot more detail here in a moment. But this is the first in a series of podcasts that we at the Steer Center are endeavoring to do in the space of virtual real estate. As our students and our faculty and our alumni are very clearly aware of, we are an academic program that focuses on the physical real estate. So when this area of the metaverse and the virtual real estate world had become more prominent and I began to see more of it, I figured we should have an opinion as a center as to what that means and how that interacts with the physical real estate. And the honest answer here, and I don't say this just because Janine's on, but the very first person we thought about having on this podcast to help us with this was our guest here today, Janine Yorio. And I say that because when you look at her bio and when you listen to her bio here momentarily, you see she spent the better part of 10 years doing what we all endeavored to do, which is own, develop, and finance commercial real estate. She spent a lot of time in the hospitality space, most principally with a company by the name of North Star Realty, and then went to another firm called the Standard Hotels for another couple of years before going into tech, what looks to be two startups, before arriving at Republic Realm as the head of Republic Realm, which was effectively the entity within the company known as Republic that was investing in the metaverse and virtual real estate. And just this past April 2021, this Republic Realm was spun out and is now known as Every Realm. April 21st, this occurred. And Every Realm has holdings in 25 of the metaverse platforms, has developed 100 metaverse real estate projects, probably more at this point, owns over 3,000 NFTs and manages an esports, gaming guild as well. So in my view, this is a traditional physical real estate investor that is now focused on the virtual real estate world. So Janine, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it. Our students appreciate it and get a lot out of this. So we appreciate that very much.
Of course, I'm glad to be here.
So Janine, I shared with you some of the comments and the themes for today, but the primary theme of our conversation today is a virtual real estate discussion for a physical real estate audience. So I actually worked with a company called Invesco Real Estate in my past, and we had a very traditional top-down, bottom-up approach to investing, right? So the top-down is sort of very theme-oriented, and we married that with a bottom-up approach to what assets do we want to own. And so I'm very curious to hear from you more about how do you think about strategy at a high level?
Well, I think about strategy all the time. That's my job, is to navigate this industry, which is very early, changing daily, under the microscope for a lot of reasons, primarily because it is the subject of so much hype right now. After Facebook changed its name to Meta, all eyes started to focus on the metaverse. And so there's a lot of very deep pockets, very sophisticated capital trying to figure out how to play this space and not really knowing what the future has in store. So there's a lot of strategy that's really focused on what do you do as a company in an industry that's potentially enormous, likely to change the world, but which is still very uncertain and not fully formed. So there's a lot of strategy involved with my job day to day, mostly around making decisions where I don't have all the facts and I can't possibly have all the facts, where we're navigating into a situation with a lot of uncertainty.
So I appreciate that. So as an example of sort of strategy here, you're in 25 metaverse platforms. So what is your mindset in owning in the various platforms that exist? And obviously, well, I shouldn't say obviously, there would certainly be more than 25 out there. So how are you selecting effectively? This is market selection at this point, right? So how are you selecting those markets?
So we have an investment committee, just like any real estate investment or traditional investment firm of any kind would have. We have an analyst whose job it is to spend all of his time looking at all of the different metaverse opportunities we get. He's actually, in a past life, was a nationally ranked gamer, a video gamer. And so I feel he's actually uniquely qualified, obviously given his depth of understanding of metaverse, but also his understanding of game mechanics and what it takes to make a game addictive and have a storyline that keeps people intrigued, I think are very valuable in this particular space because there is so much crossover between metaverse and video gaming. So his job is just to survey the landscape. And he then has to bring those opportunities to investment committee where we review them and decide whether to proceed. And it's oftentimes, in this particular industry, it's so hot. The hardest part is actually getting an allocation into a deal and making sure that we get as much as we want. And it's not always so much about passing on things, which we also do. But when we feel a lot of conviction about an opportunity, it's about trying to get as much as we can.
Got it. And what drives conviction? So again, when we think about the traditional real estate space, there'd be population growth or that would lead to a lot of job growth, or you know, there's a variety of metrics that might make a market investable, if you will. So
yeah, I'm going to say something's probably going to upset you and your students, but it has to be said. Metaverse real estate has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with real estate. It's just the only similarity are the two words in the name that this industry has chosen to use for it. It is the space inside a video game, and it has as much to do with real world real estate as it does with banner ads or domain names. It's an unfortunate name. I think the industry chose it because it makes it easy to understand for people that have a difficult time conceptualizing what metaverse is and what the space inside it ought to be called or how it ought to be viewed. But we don't even remotely look at it like real estate when we invest in it. And it's a coincidence that my background is in real estate. I do think that has made it easier for me to explain things to the traditional real estate audience. But the fact is, there's absolutely nothing in common between what we're doing and real estate in the real world. We don't view the asset we're buying as anything like real estate. We look at it as early stage venture investing in very early stage companies that are tangentially related to video gaming. So we look for things like founder market fit. Is the team compelling to us? Do they have some unique competitive advantage? Have they done something like this before? Do they have the technical talent to actually execute on a vision, which metaverse by definition is complicated. It's a video game where people can build content on top of the video game. So it has to be even more interactive than the most interactive video games you've seen, with a builder tool that's easy for a mainstream audience that may not know how to code to use. So there's a lot of complexity there. We want to see depth of technical talent and a roadmap that we think is achievable. We also want to see signs of early traction. So most of these metaverses that we're looking at haven't launched yet, but there are still ways to figure out if the world is excited about what this team is building. Oftentimes there'll be a landing page. There's the beginning of a Discord community. There might be some activity on Twitter. There might be some investors that invested in the previous rounds that signal a lot of excitement on the part of the video game industry or entertainment, or you know, just some competitive advantage in a sea of tons of competition, because these metaverse companies aren't just competing with other metaverse companies. They're competing with everything. So the time you spend in the metaverse is going to be time you could spend in one metaverse or another, or watching Netflix or going to a bar or sleeping, you know, so it's a form of procrastination the same way video gaming is. And therefore the experiences in the metaverse have to be so compelling that they're going to draw you from your favorite form of procrastination and lure you to this new one and get you to come back over and over again. And that, as we all know, is psychologically very difficult to achieve repeatedly. If you look at the success of something like Facebook or Twitter or TikTok, where we all spend ungodly amounts of time that make no sense relative to our own personal life trajectory, and yet we do it, it's because they've figured out how to create those, you know, dopamine hits and a UX that's just with a never-ending scroll. There are all these cheap tricks that work well, but there are plenty of other companies that have tried to duplicate those same tricks and haven't succeeded. So the metaverse is going to be very much the same way, where there will be lots of attempts to capture the popular imagination, retain people and get them to come back over and over again, and then ultimately transact. But there's also going to be a bunch of failures and a lot of companies that don't figure it out, which is why we're taking this very diversified approach so early, because who knows what's going to work. I mean, obviously we have a thesis and that's what we invest on. And we do have sometimes more conviction about certain platforms than others. But the one thing I know for absolute certain is that nobody on the planet knows what the metaverse is going to look like in 2 years. And so the industry is just changing so rapidly that we want to give ourselves latitude for lots of different potential outcomes and not just betting on one particular outcome.
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I appreciate that. And I certainly appreciate what you said as it relates to the real estate connection, if you will. And I'm going to keep drawing you back in there, not because I'm trying to sort of, you know, I have an agenda, but I'm just trying to help our audience and myself understand. It seems like there are traditional real estate investors who are investing in this, though, right? So Jamestown is a perfect example. Is that just them, you know, diversifying their own sort of capital allocation into areas outside of commercial real estate? Or is there anything that they're sort of inherently looking at that could have some shred of, you know, connection to commercial real estate?
A lot of LPs in venture capital are oftentimes real estate families and real estate family offices. So the connection between early stage tech and real estate is one that dates back long before Metaverse. I do think that the fact that this particular industry is called by most people Metaverse real estate has attracted an even higher percentage of real estate investors to it. That still doesn't mean it's real estate. There is this false notion that the Metaverse will want or require digital twins of real world buildings in the Metaverse. And I also think that's what's been very confusing to a lot of real estate players. They think, okay, we're gonna build, you know, the Empire State Building in the Metaverse. And maybe that will work, but why would somebody come to the Empire State Building more than once? What are they gonna do when they get there? It's not enough to replicate an architectural model of a building. Because, okay, maybe you and I have both been there once. That's true for me. I don't need to go back every day, right? So it's not enough to build a digital twin. You have to think about what is it about this Metaverse experience, whether you call it the Empire State Building or you call it Space Invaders, that's going to get people to come back over and over and over again and spend a disproportionate, almost unhealthy amount of their time in it. And it's got to be more than just a replication of a real world building. Because we all know, look, nobody wants to go to their real office today anyway. So why would they want to go to a fake office in the Metaverse? You have to give people reasons to return. And the Metaverse is a form of procrastination. It's a form of entertainment. It's competing with television. It has to be really compelling and entertaining. And in my opinion, real estate developers are not necessarily the best qualified people to figure out those activations. I do think it will end up being, they may be the capital, but the people that are going to create content that's going to get people to come to the Metaverse are people that come from video gaming, traditional entertainment, digital entertainment, and those sectors, and people that are incredibly clever and understanding of how the human brain works and what it takes to get people to procrastinate in your particular flavor. So that's why I think it's obviously wonderful for us that real estate capital is intrigued, and I'm excited for there to be a more mainstream audience. But I'm also concerned that if a lot of boring content gets built in the Metaverse, a lot of these digital twins that don't have any hooks, then the Metaverse is going to be a punchline. It has to be built by people that understand that this is a video gaming environment with a social layer and a content creator economy. And if it isn't, if it's just a bunch of digital twins, it's going to end up being a punchline. So we need technology developers, game designers, people that understand the complexity of this landscape to jump in and start building projects, which is happening in droves. It's just that's where I strongly believe the real innovation is going to come for this space.
So you talked about procrastination, which I appreciate, as will our students. You talked about gaming, which they'll also appreciate. And it seems as though these metaverses vary, as you know, in terms of being very gaming centric, for example, or not. And so, in your view, is it truly a gaming execution here? Are there any other sort of what I'll call, you know, rationale for existence that exists beyond simply gaming?
So let's talk about what is a video game. So there's the concept of a video game that it's a game, that you're just playing it and it's, you know, like Pac-Man, you're eating chips or something. That is what a video game is. But what is the Metaverse? A Metaverse is what happens when the entire internet starts behaving like a video game, meaning it's immersive and interactive. And then when you do one thing, it has a reaction. So for example, if you build a digital twin on a website and you, again, going back to the example of the Empire State Building, and you build that and you can walk around it, that's not immersive. That's not interactive. The second you make it such that if I punch a button and the elevator doors open, that's a video game. A video game doesn't mean I have to shoot somebody or have a quest or it has to be about football. It's more about what the software engineering requirements are behind it. And it's that as your avatar interacts with the environment, things happen. And when you turn that doorknob, the door opens. And it requires a video game developer to program it so that it knows when the avatar puts its hand near the doorknob, the door opens. So it's not that the Metaverse is about gaming. It's that the only people on the planet that can build the Metaverse are video game developers. Gotcha. And that's what the connection is between gaming and Metaverse. And some Metaverses may be about gaming and have gaming narratives and be designed by game designers, but that's not really the connection. The connection is that the Metaverse will be built by video game developers, the same software engineers that know how to program video games are really the only ones qualified to build the metaverse.
Got it. So maybe pivoting a little bit here and thinking about how, again, how this could have any relation in the built environment. But, you know, there are retailers that seem to be jumping into this a bit, like, you know, Nike as an example, you know, obviously Atari's been big. And it would seem to me that a traditional retail execution might be the most likely, you know, blending here. And again, I might be grasping at straws based upon what you said out of the gate here. But is there some execution opportunity there for retailers, whether they have an NFT and they get to go to a store opening that, you know, others had an ability to go to because they were in the metaverse and they visited their shop? I mean, is there anything along those lines that makes any sense?
I think there will be. I think one of the big impediments to the thing we're talking about is product discovery, right? Walking into a store and seeing shoes or makeup or whatever it is you're looking at on a table, or the way we often do it now is on a 2D website scrolling through. Will people have the opportunity of product discovery in the metaverse? And I think the answer is yes. The issue is today that most of the metaverse platforms that exist have a very cartoonish and crude rendering quality. So if I were to look at a sneaker in Decentraland, it doesn't really show me what the sneaker looks like in real life. And if I'm going to pay a relatively high price for it, I'm going to want to see it. You know, think about what you require of a website. Oftentimes they're like 8 or 10 photos of a sneaker from different angles, and it's a photograph. It's not a cartoonish rendering. So I do think that as the rendering quality of the metaverse platforms becomes much more photo real, we will see more and more product discovery happening in metaverse. And certainly things are moving in that direction. But in my estimation, we're probably 2 years away from having a metaverse platform that is photo real that can be used on desktop, because the problem with a lot of that is a hardware problem. It's very heavy to have that rendering quality in a persistent video game environment, and oftentimes doesn't work on a MacBook, doesn't work on mobile. So, you know, you have these hardware issues. Like hardcore gamers, as you probably know, usually either play with a gaming console or they have a tricked out computer they call a gaming rig in order to play it. So I think there's a technology vertical that's trying to catch up with the impending technology needs that are going to be a function of these high fidelity metaverses that are coming along. I think the most interesting aspect of retail in the metaverse is this idea of being able to go shopping with your friends. Right now, you and I could be shopping on the exact same website. Say we're on, you know, Nordstrom.com. I don't know you're there. You don't know I'm there. We could put the exact same thing in our basket at the exact same time. And there is no social aspect to it. The metaverse changes that, because not only will we both walk in and presumably see each other there, you know, you get some sort of notification that you're here and I'm there, but we can then talk to each other and have a social experience, kind of like the way we might in the real world if we decided to go shopping together. And what's more interesting is you might be on one continent and I might be on another while it's happening. And so literally worlds are colliding. And that's where I think it starts getting really interesting, and you can start to understand why retailers and consumer products companies might want to spend what seems to be ungodly amounts of money building presences in the metaverse. But when you think about it, is there effectively stores that are open 24/7 to the entire planet? The total addressable market is huge, and you can see why they might spend more than they would on a, you know, a Times Square flagship or a Soho flagship, which they generally spend a lot of money on. So I do think there are some interesting opportunities for retail, for music, for film, for fashion. I don't think anybody has really cracked the code yet. And again, I think a lot of that is due to the technology needing to catch up with what the consumer products industry requires from a rendering standpoint.
That makes a lot of sense. So as I said at the beginning, you've done a number of development projects in the metaverse. So can you talk about what are you developing, and you know, what's the end game there? If it's not operating cash flow per se, and sort of, you know, it's got to be an appreciation play at the end, I assume. But, you know, what are you building and what is your, you know, investment strategy?
So we have a metaverse real estate investment vehicle that's structured like a fund, where we make most of the metaverse real estate investments. And the play there is capital appreciation. We buy low and intend to sell high. And we also develop the metaverse real estate that we buy through that vehicle. So in that particular program, we built a shopping mall in Decentraland called Metajuku. which initially had two tenants. Now it has three. We recently rented out one of the storefronts to JP Morgan. And now we have a bunch of new tenants that want to be in that shopping mall as well. And I think there will be future opportunities like that where we build something and then look to rent it out and generate some income. But largely it is a capital appreciation play in the metaverse today, just because there is so much speculation.
And are these retailers or and you know, companies you talk about, JP Morgan, I assume they are looking at essentially two, right? The Sandbox and Decentraland. Is that, you know, just, is that a fair statement or how are they, you know, looking at their exposure?
So Decentraland and the Sandbox get about 98% of the press coverage about the metaverse, but there are 300 or more different metaverse companies in existence in various different stages, ranging from early stage planning to fully launched. And we look at all of them. We've built developments in Somnium Space. We're building something now in Nifty Island, in High Street. So I think obviously we like Decentraland and the Sandbox a lot. We're heavily invested in both, but we're also invested in 23, I think actually 24 as of yesterday, other platforms that we're just as excited about and expect a lot more coming down the pike in the future. There's a lot of money and talent in this space and a lot of exciting things happening. So I don't think anybody who truly knows the metaverse is only looking at those two. I think a lot of people who don't know the metaverse get stuck at those two, because if you Google it, they're the only ones that come up. But again, that's why people work with us, because we're deeply immersed in the space and spend the time and do the work to get to know what the entire competitive landscape looks like, not just what the media tells us is the competitive landscape.
Got it. If you think about a metaverse like Superworld as an example, that's an overlay on the actual globe versus either of the two that we've been talking about that aren't, is there any easier or sort of more appeal there? And is it easier potentially for a consumer of this product to understand it because it looks like what they're used to? Or is that?
I think it's easier to understand, but that doesn't mean it's more likely to catch on. I actually think, if I'm honest, I think the things that are more likely to catch on are the more fantastic metaverses that give you things you can't do in the real world. I don't need to go do mundane things I can already do. I can already do those. I want to do things I can't do, like time travel or travel through space or be somebody totally different, maybe not even human. And I think that's where the mind wanders to. I think those are going to be the situations that catch on the fastest. I do think there is a gender divide. I think if you look at even younger female gamers, they do tend to like things that do represent real life more, whereas young boy gamers, and I'm speaking as the mother of one of each, boys like to blow things up and shoot people. And that's what draws them into these experiences. So I think it will be different for different kinds of people. And some people might resonate more with the more familiar, basically a digital twin of the real world. But I think the killer metaverse is going to be one that is photo real, one that is incredibly interactive, but that is also otherworldly and gives access to an experience that cannot be had on this earth in this life.
Is there a coming together of all these metaverses? You talked about there being 300-ish groups that are in some phase of development. Are these always going to be individualized, sort of go in, go out type of metaverses? Do you ever see this coming together?
Yeah, I am. I definitely, that's one of the big premises of this space is something we call interoperability, which is this idea that you can be the same avatar across different metaverses. You can take your swords or cars or art or whatever it is you've amassed in the form of NFTs or other assets and take them with you and move them around. So absolutely, that is where this industry is moving to. But again, it's really early days. And so a lot of what's happening now is just foundation building. And there is a vision shared by a lot of people in the industry, including me, of having this ultimate interoperability. But at this point, we're just trying to get things to the point where they've launched. Where of the 300 or plus metaverses that we're aware of, maybe a dozen have actually launched. And of that dozen, like a handful are actually functional.
Jeanine Yorio, CEO, Every Realm. We certainly appreciate your time with us today and good luck as you continue to build out your company. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.